and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. Virginia football continuing to roll on through this season 8-1. Now they got a primetime date against Wake Forest back at home, friendly confines of Scott Stadium, where they're undefeated this season. But just to take a little bit of a bigger picture look at this Virginia program today, I've got one of my favorites, play-by-play guy for ESPN and ACC Network. When you hear his voice come on, you think of ACC football, you think of ACC basketball, but bigger than all of that, he is the third Elon alum to come on this podcast. So
what?
I had the distinguished honor. Yeah, yeah, you got beat by a little bit.
Okay, all right. Who are the other two, Preston? Who are the other two?
You got Connor O'Neill.
That's one.
Yeah, that's one. And then you've got Joe Savino, former Elon pitcher, who then played for UVA as well.
That's
so.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah,
so
good.
The Phoenix run large in the ACC. How you doing, man?
I'm great. Nice to be with you. Thanks for the invitation to be on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a lot easier to talk about UVA this year, and I've gotten a lot of great guests and great conversations this year because the football program is fun. It's one of the better stories in college football this year.
Yeah, it might be the best story, Preston, in all honesty, given just the climate, the build that Tony's gone through in his tenure there and things of that nature. I mean, it's amazing when you sit and look at it, just how like year to year went. And now to have an opportunity, certainly to return Virginia to the ACC championship and to potentially win it, and maybe even get to the CFP, it's a whole nother level altogether. And then the nuances of college football this year have kind of brought those stories to the surface. You know, Virginia certainly would be the one in the ACC. Vanderbilt would be the one in the SEC. I think we're even seeing a little bit of it in the Big Ten with Indiana continuing to have that kind of run. And in the Big 12, I would parlay what Texas Tech is to what Virginia is. People would say Texas Tech put a whole lot of money in their program. They did. Virginia certainly put some in theirs. And I think that is showing you that when everybody kind of gets to a level playing field, what it can be. And I couldn't be more thrilled for Tony and for Carlo Williams in many respects, because I know the job Tony was brought there to do, and now to see him have some success, I'm thrilled to see it for him and certainly for Carla and the administration she's built at Virginia.
Well, when I was talking about having you on the program, UVA SID extraordinaire Scott Fitzgerald actually sent me a clip from you on Sirius XM a few weeks ago talking about the Cavaliers. And kind of looking at this big picture now, just especially with, you know, the climate of college football right now with coaches like getting fired left and right and hanging on with Tony Elliott for this fourth season and kind of seeing this turnaround. It's kind of rare to me to see this drastic of a turnaround in year four of a coach.
Yeah, it is. But it also speaks to a virtue that we don't have a whole lot of in college athletics right now. It's called patience. And I think at times there's certain places where they realize it and they know, hey, look, we're going to have to kind of hold the rope here for a couple of years. I just had a phone call about, oh, I don't know, 2.5 hours ago. I was talking to a head coach in another league who called me about a situation, and he and I were talking about patience. We were talking about the ability to sit and build a program. And I think there is something to be said about it. I think you have to get, if you hire a first-time head coach, as Virginia did with Tony, I think you have to find time to understand he's putting his staff together. He is running this organization. Has he been a part of a successful organization? Sure he has, or else you wouldn't have hired him. But you have to allow him to create his own identity and his own brand with that organization. And then, you know, unfortunately, the tragedy occurs and you lose three players to just an awful, awful day. And now all of a sudden you almost have to reset everything you're doing. Because emotionally, this is unheard of in many respects. So, number one, I thought Virginia showed great grace with that. The second part of it is this, too. We're in a climate where, Preston, and I'm not intimately familiar with Virginia's workings as a university, okay? I know that Carla's done a great job. I thought Jim Ryan was an excellent president. I knew Craig Littlepage. My parents and Gene Cargan and his wife Lena were close friends, still are. My mom and Commissioner Cargan's widow, Lena, still talk on a regular basis. Their friendship spans almost 60 years, more than 60 years. The idea of understanding Virginia at a time when college athletics is opening the door to mass movement and mass money, okay? How is a school like Virginia going to handle that? And, oh, by the way, you got a new football coach. And, oh, by the way, the portal is open. And, oh, by the way, you know, some people are spending $40 million, others are not, right? So I think you have to account for all that. And at times, fans don't want to hear it. Fans just want to know, why are we 3-9, 4-8, 5-7? And every once in a while, the program has to have the discipline, the patience, and I'll say it, the courage to say, hey, wait a second. We got to slow down here, figure out what we're doing, be very deliberate about it, right? To say, okay, we got to make the right decisions. What's going to be the right twist for us? And here's the tricky part. There are 18 schools in the ACC, 17 all play football. Not everybody's doing it at the same time and at the same rate and the same path. You can look at any league at the highest level of college football and say every school in that league is not doing it at the same time and at the same rate. I think we all have to understand that everybody's going to get there in their own due time into whatever they're comfortable with. That's the last part I'll add to it. Not everybody's comfortable with this. There's some schools that are doing it that aren't comfortable. There are other schools who just figure, well, it's a matter of commerce and economy and everything else. Other schools are like, wait a second. We've got a graduation rate of this. We have an endowment of X. We want to be able to do all of this together congruently. And congruent doesn't happen a lot anymore. This is a wild, wild marketplace we're in for a lot of things. And like I say, though, I'm glad Virginia had the patience and the discipline and yeah, the courage to kind of see this thing through to a season like this.
Yeah, you always hear progress isn't linear. It doesn't always go in the same direction. I like that you brought up the comfortability part of it, because I don't think UVA was a place that was comfortable kind of with this new direction. But and you go back to, I think back to last year as we're finishing up in Blacksburg after that game down there where you know, Virginia was close to getting to a bowl game and, you know, they get stomped by their rivals yet again. And there's a lot of questions about not only Tony's future. Obviously, we knew he was going to come back for another year just because that's kind of the way things were trending. But Carla's future was up in the air.
Sure.
Her contract status and the turnaround and just kind of ushering in this new era for college sports right now into Virginia and kind of fitting Virginia into this new landscape.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really interesting point. Timing has to be certainly accounted for in these situations. I think the other thing has to be is where is the institution as a whole in understanding the dollars involved? And the part about getting comfortable, and I'll stand on this, I don't think everybody is comfortable. They're just kind of doing it to say we're in, right? Yeah. Look, I went to Elon. I'm very proud graduate of the school. Been fortunate to give back to the university in a couple different ways. But being on campus in the last 2.5, 3 years on a more consistent basis has allowed me to see a little bit of kind of what they think and how they work it. I can only imagine that's a much broader conversation at a larger institution, say Virginia, Clemson. How about University of Pittsburgh, where they have a multi-billion dollar worldwide leader in medicine. Virginia's got a hospital complex in Charlottesville, right there in the middle in UVA. What's that like? How does that impact some of this? I mean, again, the conversations are really, really broad here. And every once in a while to take a broad conversation, to drop it down into a very narrow crease, if you will, is difficult for people, especially when it comes to just an absolute culture change in the way you do stuff. I mean, look, do we all think that it's somewhere along the way student athletes would put money in their pocket for the revenue they're driving for universities? We all probably thought they'd get something. Did we think that they would get the reported figures we're hearing? Absolutely not. Nobody did. We thought they might get the value of the scholarship back in cash or something like that, but not seven figures, not, you know, payrolls that were in the neighborhood of 20 odd to 40 odd million dollars for single sports. It just didn't seem possible. But yet, in some cases, we're there. Others are finding a different way to do it. I do believe that one of the things that's come out of this that's really interesting is the constant look at revenue now. the revenue, the demand for the revenue in athletics and to support certain sports. I'm excited to see the brand of young people on display. I think the video game was just the, you know, was just kind of the fuse that had to be lit here, right? You know, I kind of get a smile on my face when I go to a marketplace and I see a billboard like at Clemson, where I'll be again on Saturday. You drive into town the back way at a Fair Play, South Carolina, you see a billboard. It's got a Clemson football player on it. And in downtown Atlanta on the Grady Curve on 85 a couple of years ago, Jordan Davis, who's now a member of the Philadelphia Eagles, was on a Morgan & Morgan billboard, yeah. You know, for a law firm based in Florida that's a personal injury attorney, stuff like that. I think some of that stuff is really clever. I think it's good for the kid if they're, you know, again, responsible for it, but responsible with the money they're making. Some are, some aren't, unfortunately. But I do believe that part of it was going to happen down the road. I just don't think we saw it happening in a window of less than 24 months.
Yeah, for sure. I want to go back because I've made mention of this before, but you know, Virginia football had kind of started to have that upward momentum under Bronco Mendenhall and
sure
kind of
did.
culminating in 2019, which now coincidentally is the last time Virginia played in a bowl game, in a postseason game, in the Orange Bowl. And then obviously COVID hit, and then it just kind of started tumbling down and, you know, culminates with, you know, Bronco Mendenhall stepping down, resigning. Of course, now he's back in college football, which is at New Mexico. Now is at Utah State. But even from 2019, a lot has changed about Virginia and this football program. You look at the new football facility, all the various emails we get about anonymous donors dropping off a bag of money. things have changed drastically even since then.
Yeah, it feels like middle of the night type stuff, doesn't it? All of a sudden, here's an email on a Friday. I think a couple of weeks ago in Chapel Hill, there was an email showed up at like 6:30 that morning saying, hey, by the way, here was this, you know, $4 million donation or whatever it was to the University of Virginia to help football. Yeah, look, the pandemic and the things about college athletics out of the pandemic, both literally, you know, on the culture's conscience, things of this nature, I think were difficult for some. I do believe the freedom of movement among players and the financial acumen put some coaches to a different thought place, and that's okay. Those guys either, you know, Bronco took a couple of years off, he went back out west, next thing you know, he feels good about New Mexico and now Utah State. And maybe that's the level kind of where he wants to be, right? Just in that kind of time frame. You know, I would equate Tony Bennett's departure to some of this too. You know, I mean, there's a time and a place where Tony Bennett may reconsider. He may not. He may just decide, hey, you know what? I'm good. I won my national title. I have my legacy at Virginia for rebuilding the basketball program, and I'm good with that. And if so, then good for him. I think the other coaches who have stepped down, football, basketball, and even to a degree baseball-wise, Preston, are all guys who had some percentage of this landscape. The part you bring up about the 2019 title game, and it's interesting because Mark Packer and I had just kind of started the show on ACC Network in 2019. Bronco was a very frequent guest, for which we really were grateful because he was fun to talk to. It's the last time you guys beat the Hokies, right, to finish the year that year. Amazing game at Scott Stadium. And now here you are again 6 years later, and in many respects, it's got that feel again. It's got that, you know, hey, man, we're all together and we're all pulling in the same direction. And I think, again, I'll speak to Tony, but I'll also speak to the things you talk about from a physical plant scenario at the same time. The new football facility is amazing. I mean, that place is just like a palace. I mean, you
just
walk
came
in
from there.
and no offense to Charlottesville, but you walk in there and you think you're in Los Angeles. You think you're in one of these buildings in L.A. where, like, you walk by the windows and they either frost up so you can't see outside or the shade comes down or something like that. And then you go in these other ones. We had a meeting up there prior to the Stanford game where we sat in one of the meeting rooms, and I was scared to touch anything like in the middle of the table for fear that I would drop a screen down or do something like that. It's an amazing facility. And in talking to Des Kitchings briefly about it, he said it kind of recruits itself, right? I mean, it's so nice that people come in and go, man, this is great. I could spend all day here. Well, guess what? You get to, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a great testament to what Virginia wants football to be and how big football is. The second part of this is they haven't lost the charm of what they are. You know, in rebuilding this, it's still a really proud program. You're not ahead of yourself on this. You've had enough tough seasons kind of in between, if you will, that you realize you value these trips. Same thing is going on right now at Georgia Tech, okay?
Yeah.
Georgia Tech, remember 16 years ago, a team that basically won the ACC championship, went to the Orange Bowl, and got wrecked by Adrian Claiborne in Iowa in the Orange Bowl, right? But now on the way back up the chain, if you will, they remember just how much they value these type seasons. And I think Virginia and Georgia Tech have a lot of similarities like that. I think Duke is enjoying it, but it's a different kind of feel because they're a couple coaches removed from David Cutcliffe. The other idea about Virginia in this particular discussion with me, Preston, is I think they've got staying power. And I think they have found kind of what the niche is. And that's the other football part of this from a roster management standpoint. I think schools have to find out where they fit in the big picture. And Virginia, I think, is pretty comfortable with the way this happened in the offseason in identifying players from all parts of the country who could come in and contribute and be part of this renaissance, if you will.
Well, that's the really interesting part about this. And what I keep going back to, anyone can jump into the portal and bring in a lot of players, but to see how intentional they were about which players they brought in, I think is what has made this such a success. Chandler Morris, Jamari Taylor. I think you mentioned Daniel Rickard, the Tennessee Tech transfer.
I'm my favorite player in the league. The story is my favorite. It is. I mean, a 235-pound defensive end who made a ton of plays in Cookeville for Tennessee Tech and now has come to Virginia and has made as many as he made at Tennessee Tech at 235 pounds. And, yeah, I'm a huge Rickard fan. I just think the story is amazing. I think his arrival. But there is something to be said. You mentioned Harrison Whaley, Jamari Taylor, who was a North Carolina Central guy. Harrison Whaley is Northern Illinois, then Wyoming, and now Virginia, and he's from Johnston, Iowa. Okay? There, and again, a reference to the conversation I had with a coach a couple hours ago. He, too, then said the same thing I've heard from the Virginia coaches and some other places. The power four guys who transfer in the portal, Preston, that's fine. We know the talent level. We're familiar with the names, things of that nature, right? And some of those guys, it works out fine. Chico Bennett's a player, started at Georgia Tech, came to Virginia, had a nice run in Charlottesville, right? So take that for this. The players that most of these college coaches at the P4 level are finding out got a little bit more under the hood than most are the ones from D2 and FCS.
Yeah.
Because they've never had kind of the lap of luxury that exists at the P4 level. For instance, they never had food all the time. They never had the ability to get the gear. They didn't necessarily have a football exclusive facility. They didn't have football exclusive, maybe study hall, any of those things, right? Is the money impactful? Sure it is. But Kasim Moore, kid from Elon, lining up at defensive end behind, I guess, K-Mac, right? On that side of the ball.
Yeah.
Kasim Moore is a kid who was highly productive at Elon and now is transferred to Virginia. I haven't talked to Kasim. I don't know him particularly well. But it's my understanding that he, like a lot of FCS guys, has shown up to say, hey, you know what, I can play on this level. Rickard is another example. And this is where I think Virginia's found their sweet spot, to be honest. Yeah. You're going to now, with the reputation of Whaley and Jamari Taylor and some of these other guys, Preston, I think Tony and his staff can now look at the transfer portal at the FCS and be fairly selective and judicious about the kind of kid they bring in. I'm not going to be surprised they get really good kids in the next few years that route.
Yeah, I think we've seen it time and time again. The Power Four names, those are the shiny ones that get you the recruiting rankings and everything. But a lot of times the substantive stuff is those guys coming up from the lower ranks, like you said. Not necessarily the same, but – you know, Chandler Morris has been kind of on a wild journey as a college guy. I've gotten to know Chad Morris a lot this year because he's been taking
every
the year
game
off. enjoying himself up at the top of Scott Stadium, or maybe not enjoying himself, as he told me. I think it was like, you know, whatever, 48 minutes of hell watching that Florida State game.
Yeah.
But the journey that Chandler's been on to go from Oklahoma to TCU to North Texas and then kind of bounce back. First off, I always take a minute to give Eric Morris down in North Texas his flowers because who is a better quarterback whisperer in the country right now than Eric Morris after Cam Ward, Jon Mateer, Testamaker right now, and then Morris as well. But Chandler has kind of given this kind of, a purpose and a path this year, it feels like.
Yeah, they're all from the Zach Kittley tree too. Don't forget that part,
There
right?
you go.
Chandler to me, it's funny he wears four because when I first saw him play in some tape at North Texas, I kept going, man, there goes Brett Favre again. Right there's Brett Favre. And he was gutty at Carolina in the win at Chapel Hill. He was a gutty. I mean, because he had clearly re-injured the shoulder and was feeling it, but yet he was in there, to say like one of the movies, he hung in there like grim death, boy. I mean, he was unbelievable. I think he's been the centerpiece. He's the one we expected to kind of change the position at Virginia. And look, this is no Anthony Calandra, fine. Tony Musket, fine. But Virginia had been searching, in all honesty, since Brennan Armstrong, for sure. And more than likely, Bryce Perkins. And for me, Chandler Morris came in. But this is the part two. I don't want to overlook the critical nature of this. And Roddy Jones has reminded me a couple times on our SiriusXM show we do about this. For all the good things they've done at the skill side, and they've done a lot of good things, right? We haven't even talked about Edgerrin yet, right? They did a great job on the offensive line. They got a couple guys added in the offensive line that kind of fortified who they were going to be. You already knew that Boley and Josie were going to be stalwarts on the left side, and they took care of the right. And when you do that, and then you bring the gunslinger in, the never say die quarterback. And that's what he is. He's the never say die guy. And I think he kind of, rising tides lift all boats. That's Chandler Morris. And I think he's done a great job of willing Virginia. And I think he's also been very, very raw about who he is and when he plays well and when he doesn't. I mean, I thought some of the comments he made after the pick to Sloan at NC State were revealing about who he is and what he's going to be. And my impression is this: he's going to win or lose the ACC championship and the CFP or whatever else happens here. Chandler Morris is going to be one of those guys that, as I like to say, shouldn't have to buy a meal in Charlottesville if anybody sees him, right? It's just one of those guys. And I think he's going to change the course of Tony Elliott's program in many respects. This team is likely going to change the course of Tony Elliott's fortunes as Virginia's coach. And I think that's a good thing for everybody.
Let's look at it now. Virginia 5-0 in the ACC on top of the conference, 5-0 for the first time. There's 5-1 loss teams sitting right behind them: Georgia Tech, Pitt, Louisville, SMU, Duke. What have you made of this just ACC race up to this point?
I think it's fascinating. I think it's funny the brands we had, kind of picked out to start the year. Some have materialized and some haven't. We're getting ready to run a graphic on Saturday night, obviously, with Florida State and Clemson because they were both in the front end. And now the only one kind of standing from the front end at the top is Miami. And are they really there would be the question.
No.
Clemson's not there. Florida State's not there. Miami's not there with two losses. Look, Virginia's played this thing out. Nobody had a better trip to California last week than Virginia because they went to California, won a football game, and meanwhile, everybody else around them lost. What it did do was set the stakes incredibly high for the Duke game because Duke, now with the one loss in the league to Georgia Tech, is still a very viable candidate here. And I don't have the patience to do this. Roddy had started down the road on this yesterday when we did our first SiriusXM show about the tiebreakers. And I think he got five or six in before he finally said, it's going to get down to percentages and all this. And then I think David Hale tweeted today that there's seven different possible scenarios or whatever, or what might happen in the championship game. Tony's biggest strength and his best strength for his football team is they're keeping their eye on the ball for what they're doing. Saturday night, play Wake Forest. The following week, take it on. Down the road, whatever. Then you play Virginia Tech at the end, and if it works out, you'll go to Charlotte the next week. Because I think it's probably going to run its race here. I really do. I think it's going to run its race all the way to the end. Georgia Tech has a week off. Then they play BC in Boston. Then they play Pitt in Atlanta, and they play with Georgia at the end of the season, which obviously their conference work will be done. If I had to guess today, I think Georgia Tech and Virginia are going to play in Charlotte. Now, that's me. I still think, however, you can't discount what Duke is capable of doing. I don't think you can discount what Louisville is capable of doing at this point. And there's some really interesting games still to come, and I think it's good for the ACC. Now, the problem is it's not any of the big brands anybody expected. So everybody's got to kind of win their own game. And I think if the four teams ranked Preston continued to win, that's good for the league. The CFP that'll come out, we're taping this before obviously it comes out. It's probably going to come out. I think Virginia is going to be the highest rated ACC team. And I think Georgia Tech and Louisville and probably Miami are still going to be hanging around. And we'll see what happens in the next 4 weeks. That's the best part about the college football playoff, people lose sight over. The rankings change every week based on what happens. And the committee's intangibles and identity and things like that will evolve as the season goes on, or as the rankings go on here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, Tony Elliott said he doesn't want his team watching the college football playoff rankings as they come out. I asked Trell Harris how do you avoid that, and he's like, "Well, I have YouTube TV, so no problem."
Good for
he said
Trell
he
Harris,
couldn't.
man.
He's
Way to
a he's
go.
a he's great. I had him on the podcast a few weeks ago, but he's great. Yeah, I guess just I think I would probably predict Virginia and Georgia Tech as well, but I mean there's a lot to go. One thing I wanted to ask you, because you witnessed Virginia in one of these close cardiac Cavs games against UNC, do those discount their record to you when they're in these kind of games where they can't get it over the line? I hear a lot of Louisville fans discounting the loss to Virginia because there's two defensive touchdowns, and I was like, I mean, at the end of the day, like you can throw out all the analytics you want at me, but like, you know, Virginia won the game, and like that's what should matter at the end of the day for the college football playoff.
Old golf buddy of mine said, well, they just eventually they total up the numbers that are on the card, and that's your score. How you got to the score, that's kind of irrelevant. What's the score? And that is the way we measure the games, is the score. If we did it on style points, teams wouldn't be viewed merely as successful as they are because they did it in different ways. I don't discount the tight games. I don't. I'm sorry. I think you won the game. And at the end, it's a little bit like Duke's first win at Clemson last week in 45 years. And people want to, I'm sure you've heard, want to go chapter and verse on a what should have been called defensive holding and was called pass interference. But for me, that whole idea, if the score is the score of the game, Preston, you win the game. Congratulations. You tip your hat and you move on. I mean, we've been doing it that way for 150 some years. So why are we changing? But I do believe that Virginia has learned a lot in the close games. I will be honest with you. I thought they played with more poise in Chapel Hill than Carolina, who had been there the week before at Cal. I think the Florida State game, the Louisville game, the Carolina game. By the way, there was a point in a snap last week in Berkeley where it could have been a tight game, right? And
Absolutely.
it wasn't. And you know why? Because they had been there. I think every team has an experience line based on their progress of the season. Look, Georgia Tech got blindsided the other night. I'll use them as an example because of what we mentioned a moment ago. They didn't play great on offense, found a way to win at Wake Forest. They didn't play great on defense and paid for it the other night in Raleigh. Because NC State played well on both sides of the ball. I just think that's what this is. Look, Jamari Taylor had a wonderful day in Raleigh. He would love to give that back to get the win, I'm sure.
For sure.
But at the same time, do you want Chandler Morris throwing the ball like he did in overtime against Florida State, or because he threw the interception to a C.N. Sloan in Raleigh, not throwing the ball in the red zone, right? I mean, that's to me, that's how your season wears on you. That's how the behavior pattern of a football team changes. And no, I don't hold anything against Virginia for the way the season has gone, just because the games are close.
Last thing on football, and then we'll get out of here. But the defense, I think, has been a big part of why Virginia's been able to sustain themselves in these games. I don't know
Sure.
how, but they've made clutch play after clutch play. I mean, they won on a safety a couple weeks ago, and the guy that made that play
Now
made
you
the
want to talk about a
picks.
game you deserve to lose and found a way to win. There's the one.
There it is, yeah. But the guy that made that play, the guy that made the pick six against Cal to win that game, Cam Robinson, I mean, I said it on the podcast earlier this week. There's very few more impactful defenders in the ACC right now than Cam Robinson.
I totally agree. Not since Isaiah Simmons at Clemson a handful of years ago have we seen a guy impact his team's success like we've seen Cam Robinson. And Simmons now was a top five pick in the NFL draft. He was a freak on the field. He was a coach's clip waiting to happen every day. But for me, when Cam Robinson returned to the lineup, he has made productive play after productive play. And sometimes you've got to have kind of that guy. And I'll give you an example. Peyton Wilson was that guy at NC State a couple of years ago. He's a defensive player of the year. Look, I think the player of the year, in my opinion, right now, and this won't be wildly popular on your podcast, and I'm sorry. I think the player of the year is down to Darian Mensah or Haynes King. Okay. I think that's just where it is on the offensive side. The defensive battle a month ago was lock, stock, and barrel for Reuben Bain at Miami. He had been unbelievable, right? That's probably changed, and Robinson is making enough plays now that we'll probably have to have a discussion about where Cam Robinson is. But I tell you what, it's going to be really, really interesting. This guy has got a will to win, and it won't stop. And for me, you got to have that guy. You got to have that one guy to have the kind of season Virginia, I think, wants to have.
Absolutely. All right. We talked about before you got on here, you caught a few glimpses of basketball
Oh,
over Monday night. How do you deal with the crossover? Like, when do you start getting more into basketball?
Next week, I'll do a game next Tuesday night in Chapel Hill,
Okay.
Radford in North Carolina, which is kind of fun and unique for me. Radford was my first job out of college for 3 years.
There you
The
go.
AD was a player on the basketball team. So, and Zach Chu was an assistant coach, who's their new coach, was an assistant at SMU last year. So I'm looking forward to seeing them. And then I'll do another game the following week. And then I will not do a game the week of Thanksgiving, but I will do a game the week after Thanksgiving. I'll do an ACC-SEC challenge game at Syracuse. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Basketball is fun for me. ESPN, because of the stuff I do in the NFL on Sundays with the Falcons, they are very accommodating not to overbook me, if you will, to where I'm running around like I'm an out of business, out of work country singer. But yeah, I'm enjoying basketball. I love sitting watching last night. The technology in this world is getting more amazing by the minute. I had a quad box going last night
You go.
with Clemson, Carolina, NC State, and Wake Forest. So I took in, tried to watch four at a time. That didn't go so well early. I got used to it. And then I tried to watch, I think I told you, I watched parts of eight games. I watched two timeouts. So I tried to watch 8 minutes of eight games last night. And I saw some good things. I was really impressed. Cam Corn at Pitt had a great game last night. Syracuse looks a lot different than I thought they would, with Nate George, the Georgia Tech transfer, playing with Starling and Donnie Freeman and Kyan Anthony, Carmelo's son. I watched Miami briefly last night. I think they'll still be wearing name tags on the floor, to be honest, at Miami. Ernest
Most of these
Uday,
schools,
the
yeah.
yeah, Ernest Uday, the transfer from TCU, was really impressive last night, but they were gonna win anyway. Let me see who else I watch. I watched Clemson. Clemson's gonna be one of the more unique teams we've expected the last few years. Brad Brown just kind of picking and choosing a transfer guy. They got eight this year. I mean, in the past they'd have two or three. Now they got eight of them, nine of them. It's a really different basketball team. I think Clemson will get better as the year goes. And I watched Virginia, and I was impressed. Although, man, I told you this too. They took a ton of threes. Holy cow, I thought I was watching an old ABA game, right? I thought the Virginia Squires were playing, not the Virginia Cavaliers. So, but no, I'm excited to see Ryan. He's a terrific coach. I couldn't be more thrilled with the head coaching moves that were made in the league too. So, I'm excited about basketball, Preston. I am. I think it's a sport that's in a little bit of trouble on the landscape of American sports, but I am excited to see where the ACC can take us this year for sure.
How about Ryan, last bucket of the game, Owen Odom, his son, getting a nice reverse layup. So couldn't have scripted that any better.
Let me just tell you this. The grandmother was the happy. Lynn Odom was happier about that than any other Odom in the building. I can tell you that.
Yeah, I think Ryan said they couldn't make it, but they were hoping that they figured out the technology, whatever streaming service
oh,
they
boy.
Were using.
Well, G David Odom on the G David Odom trying to get something on an iPad or a laptop computer, that's something we should show on ACC Network.
Yeah. Notice I did not bring up the Falcons at all throughout this conversation. We're going to leave it at that. I've got the Matt
Appreciate
Ryan
you.
helmet back here behind me, but pining for some days of old right now. We'll see. Hopefully the rest of the season go a little bit better for them. But
I
Wes,
hope
thank
so
you
too.
so much for fitting us into your busy schedule, man. It's always a pleasure.
Preston, thanks. I appreciate the invite.
Awesome. All right, that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. We will have a little bit more coming up later in the week. ACC Huddle is in town for this weekend's game, so we're going to have Eric McLean coming on the podcast on Thursday, so you won't want to miss that. You can find us on YouTube, Apple, Spotify. We'll see you later in the week.